announcing to everyone that Jesus is Lord and Christ. This is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon.
Watch therefore and be ready, for you do not know the day nor the hour. Those were Jesus' very important words at the end of the parable of the 10 virgins in the Olivet Discourse. That's what we're considering today on Abounding Grace Radio, that we would be a watching and a ready people for the second coming of Jesus. The scriptures give great attention to this. They want God's people looking for the coming day, expecting it, living in light of it. That's what we're considering today on Abounding Grace, the importance of being ready, watching for this great day. Thanks for tuning into Abounding Grace. Our number is 888-504-8805, 888-504-8805. If you are tuning in throughout the continent of Africa, U.S., Canada, or worldwide online, we welcome you to the program. Thanks for taking time out of your day to tune in. Please visit us again on that web address at agradio.org. Many resources there for you. All of these programs are there, free for download. You also have access to articles and resources to help you. Please visit that website. Also, links to churches in your area and a way to support us right there online. And also find us on Facebook at Abounding Grace Radio or on Twitter at AG Radio 1. So thankful you take time to tune out of your day. Here is now the message from Matthew chapter 25, which I have titled, Watch Therefore and Be Ready. Thanks today for tuning in to Abounding Grace Radio. Well, in the previous chapter, you know this Olivet Discourse is all one. But in the previous chapter, you know that Jesus had given a lot of instruction to answer the question of his disciples of when would be the sign of his coming and what will be the end of the age. And Jesus gave a detailed and helpful explanation to answer those two questions of the disciples. He answered them in that order. He gave them the signs and what would be the sign of the end of the age, his return. But you'll notice here that he gave many things that he said that would happen before he would come. He said that there would be false Christs who would come and they will deceive many. There will be wars and there will be rumors of wars. There will be famines. There will be earthquakes in various places. Many will be delivered up to tribulation. And then that great day will bring about. The sun will be darkened. The moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from heaven. The trumpet will be heard and the angels will go out and they will gather together his elect from the four winds of heaven, and that will be the end. The new heavens and the new earth where righteousness shall dwell. What we have following this is what interests me. Why I wanted to focus on this tonight. Really it is Jesus' way of pressing people into the kingdom. This is what I think is lost today a lot, that there is not a lot of pressing of people into the kingdom. Most preaching is just nice, it's comforting, but it doesn't press people, it doesn't push people. And Jesus' preaching would have made us really uncomfortable this way because he was constantly pressing people into the kingdom. He was pushing them. He was forcing them to a decision. He wouldn't let people remain neutral. You're either accepting it or you're rejecting it, and the way that you're choosing and where you're going is evident. Jesus was doing this. So as he pressed, he would often use startling imagery, and he would use stories and parables to make this very point. He wanted people to understand that his second coming in this particular context would be completely unexpected. In other words, nobody would know the day nor the hour. Nobody would be able to identify when this great day is going to come. It will be business as usual all the way to the end, and then one day, when everyone least expects it, knock, knock, trumpet sounds, there he is. He's coming. Jesus says this at the end of the previous chapter. Therefore, you must be ready, he says. You must be ready because the Son of Man is coming at an hour that you don't expect. And then he poses this question in verse 45 at the end of chapter 24. Who then is the wise and faithful servant?
whom his master has set over his household to give them their food at the proper time. Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. It's evident. It's evident who's ready. It's evident who's watching. Truly, I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. But if that wicked servant says to himself, my master is delayed, and then he goes out and does all these things that indicate that there's no real expectation of his return. Jesus is dealing with that attitude here. Jesus is addressing that mindset. We look at that somewhat last time in Peter, of a people who say, oh, everything just continues to go on as it was since the beginning of the world. There will be no coming. Jesus will not allow people to go down that road. He wants people ready, and he wants people expecting. And that's what we're considering together tonight, pressing us to think a lot about being ready for his second return. The goal tonight being a new year in front of us, being ready for him to come and believing that it could happen this year, that the Lord Jesus Christ could return and it's over. Do we believe that? Do we live like that? Do we think like that? That's the goal. That's the goal of this. So he begins using now a parable. In fact, it's interesting that there's really three stories that follow the sermon on the Olivet Discourse. And these three stories are fascinating. The first one here is a very basic story. It's a brilliant story. It's an interesting story for sure, that there are these 10 virgins, and these 10 virgins are invited to a great feast. And this marriage feast, Jesus makes a distinction that in this great feast, as the invitation went out, some were very wise and some were very foolish. The wise were ready for the bridegroom when he came for the feast, but the foolish ones were not. They didn't take any oil in their lamps, he says. Suddenly, he came. He gave the call. He gave the summons. Come, the feast is ready. Come, I'm here. And the foolish ones didn't have any oil. The wise had always carried their oil. But the foolish ones needed oil. So they asked the wise for oil, and the wise said, we can't give you our oil. You'll have to go buy some. And while they were out, the master then fully came in all of his splendor and all of his glory, and they entered in, and the door was shut. And these come knocking. We want in. And he says, it's too late. I don't know you. And then the big punchline, the big hit at the end, watch. You need to watch. You don't know the day nor the hour. Well, this is what we're looking at tonight. The kingdom of heaven is like this. And that's where I want to begin tonight. I want to look at this, that what Jesus is doing is he's showing what the kingdom is like, what will happen when it comes in all of its glory, and what we should be doing until then, how we should be responding to that. That's really the outline of this. What is the kingdom of heaven like? That's the first thing he's wrestling with, or having us wrestle with in this particular parable. And he opens it up by saying, the kingdom of heaven is like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. The question is, what is Jesus doing at this particular point, and who is Jesus talking about? What you can't miss here, and what has always struck me about this particular parable, is all of them seem closely identified with the bridegroom. I'm sure more than often this parable is described as saying, well, you've got the people in the church, and then you've got the world. And Jesus is making a great distinction between the church and the world. And I've tried to do it. I've tried to look at that parable this way, and I can't. It seems so clear to me, and I'm going to prove that to you here in a moment, that what Jesus is having us think about, a lot about, and what he's most concerned about is the state of the church before he comes, the state of the people who profess him before he comes. And so he presses this issue to prove this to you with three stories: a parable of the virgins, the parable of the talents, and then the description at the end of the separation between the sheep and the goats. What's surprising about all of these stories are a few different things. The first is that the coming in all of these three stories is completely unexpected. The foolish virgins are surprised. The ones who buried their talents thought that they had done well. And the goats at the end of this thought that they were surprised. that when Jesus exposed what they hadn't done. Well, that was the first thing. And in all of these accounts, there's a great separation. But most interesting is in each story is the surprise. Is a surprise of those who thought they were entering and didn't. And Jesus makes this distinction. Jesus is having us think about this. There are those, it's a simple truth tonight. It's a very simple truth tonight of this parable. There are those who are ready and there are those who are not. What does that mean? What do we do with that? That's a little complex. You know that. Because who here says, I feel ready? I'll deal with that. So notice in verse 2, he begins this parable and he says that here's what the kingdom of heaven is like. 10 virgins took their lamps and he went to meet the bridegroom. 5 were wise and 5 were foolish. We're looking at people who claim to belong to the bridegroom. We're looking at people who say they're coming to the bridegroom. Christ has made this distinction in the body, in here in the church. You'll notice this, that we're looking at this. Virgins have all throughout Scripture, have had a symbol of purity, have had those who belong to the Lord. But it's interesting here when you think about what Jesus is doing, of his real concern to press us to think about, are we ready, and what is the state of those who say they belong to him before he comes? I remember my grandma used to always say to me, she said, if you want to know the state of things, Chris, she was a dear believer. She studied all the time. She used to say, you don't, and it's always stuck with me. She's right. You don't need to look in the world to know the state of things. You need to look in the church to know the state of things. Look where the church is. Jesus was always giving calls about this. The scriptures all over the place are giving calls about this. Remember what Paul would say in Romans chapter 13. Besides this, you know the time. The hour has come for you to wake up out of sleep. You, believers. For salvation is nearer to us now than when we first believed. You can go right to Ephesians 5 and hear the same thing. So it is said, wake up, O sleeper. Rise from the dead and Christ will shine on you. Pay careful attention then how you walk, not as unwise but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is and don't get drunk. He's making constant contrasts this way. Drowsy saints. I don't believe this has ever meant, the hard part in preaching this is you step back from this, you say, well, it feels like Jesus is just scaring people into the kingdom, and that's not at all what he's doing. I'm going to help you to see that. But he is telling us what the kingdom is like with the goal that we would be an awake people. And that's a good thing. That's a healthy thing. This is exactly how what we read from Calvin last week as he opened up in dealing with 2 Peter chapter 3, that this is how the Lord stirs us up to be ready. He gives us passages like this, and this is exactly the way to wake us up. That's why we as pastors have to preach this, and I think there's no better time than at the end of a year and the beginning of a new year. It will be very characteristic before the second coming that there will be many slumbering in the kingdom. Many sleeping. The problem is posed in verse 3. They took their lamps with no oil in them. You could read volumes on what the oil is. Don't even think about what the oil is. It's not helpful. Here's what he's saying. There are some ready and there are some who are not. That's all that's saying. I marvel at the state of things today. You know, I rarely meet people who say they don't believe. It's really remarkable still in our post-Christian society how many people still say they believe. There are many who don't get me wrong. But I'm amazed at how many say they do. And if you press them, there's no commitment to worship. There's no commitment to any church. There's really kind of a scoffing at it. There's no real desire for fellowship. There's no involvement in the body of Christ. There's little sense of importance among these people of what we call the means of grace, the need to receive grace, and why we need to come to church. They don't even understand why we do. Christianity in our time, listen, and it's a danger in our own ranks. Christianity in our time in America, for many, is simply a cultural phenomenon. You understand that? Cultural Christianity, that's all it is. It's a, what do they say, a mile wide, an inch deep. They aren't ready at all. They aren't ready at all. Jesus encourages us here in the midst of this saying, there are those who are ready. You'll notice this here as he says, the wise took oil in their jars with their lamps. What's he saying? There are people who are ready. There are people who are watching. There are people who are looking. I thought last week in 2 Peter chapter 3 that verse at the end was so wonderful. Listen to this verse. But according to his promise, we are waiting. We are waiting for the new heavens and the new earth in which righteousness shall dwell. Can you say that tonight? You're waiting for that? I'm not saying you perfectly wait for that. But can you say tonight you wait for that? Can you say tonight you believe that's coming? Then you're carrying oil. You're believing. This is the encouragement that he gives in the midst of this. The writer, well, Paul to Thessalonians says the same thing. But you, brothers and sisters, are not in darkness so that this day should surprise you like a thief. You are children of the light and children of the day. We do not belong to the night or to the darkness. So then let us not be like others who are asleep. We know in our ranks those who are asleep, and we should be helping them. But don't be like them. So then, let us not be like others who are asleep, but let us be awake and sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk at night. But since we belong to the day, let us be sober, putting on faith and love as a breastplate, and the hope of salvation as a helmet. For God did not appoint us to suffer wrath. You hear that? God didn't appoint you for wrath, but to receive salvation. You believe that? I trust you do. There are ready people for this, and he's made a people ready. But here's my problem. Here's your problem. I went around the room tonight and I asked, do you feel ready? Not many hands would go up. Not many hands would go up. We don't often feel ready. Prayer is weak. Trust is not what we want. We struggle with every kind of worldly lust under the sun just like everyone else. And I think Jesus recognizes that here. Verse 5 is so interesting to me. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and slept. Well, that's not just talking about taking a nap. I think Jesus is really telling us what he said elsewhere. Men ought always to pray and not lose heart. Why? Because when the Son of Man comes, is he really going to find faith on the earth? Meaning, it's going to be a time of great drowsiness among the people of God. And we have to know that. Jesus called us to pray, to be looking. What amazes me is the fact that he seems to be saying that there will be a great struggle even among the righteous at times to slumber in our anticipation of his return. And haven't you felt that? Have we really been so anticipating that he'll come? If you don't believe this is possible, look at righteous Lot. They had to pull him out. The angels had to come out of Sodom and pull him out. I've often thought that if we want to understand the end, you have to look carefully at the time just before Christ's crucifixion. It's one of the greatest moments to study what the end will be like. Remember what happened in the Garden of Gethsemane? You remember when Jesus is going to the cross and his soul becomes incredibly tormented. In other words, he begins to sweat drops of blood. The wrath of God is falling on him for their sins. And he says to his disciples, watch and pray, lest you fall into temptation. For the flesh is willing, but the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. And three times he comes back, and what are they doing? They're asleep. I wonder if this is on Jesus' mind when he's telling this parable, because we're right connecting with the Olivet discourse and all of these events. Christ calling them to be awake and they're asleep. Comfort is that all along the way Jesus is praying for his own. John 17, that not one of those given to him by the Father would be lost. In our weakness, he is our strength. But I think it's important to feel the pressing of Jesus in this parable, aside from all that beautiful truth. And the importance of this is to say that even though at the end the church will seem defeated and close to extinction as they slumber, they're still the Lord's, his people. When the call comes, they're getting up. They're going to come, his people. Although even maybe at times your zeal and your excitement for this coming has waned, even in the Lord's tarrying, even though we become sluggish, the Lord has telling us when his call comes, his sheep will hear his voice and they will be up. But the pressing of the parable is this. Be awake. Be awake. And we have, at this point, Jesus really laying that down for us. For when the crisis comes, when the day comes, what happens? Well, he says in verse 6, at midnight, there was a cry. Here's the bridegroom. Come out to meet him. We've been preaching come to Jesus for a long time. We've been preaching this message for a long time. And it says in verse 7, doesn't it? Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said what? Come back to that. Think about this day for a minute. When he actually arrives, how wonderful it's going to be. On that day, he's coming to be glorified in his people, to be marveled at among those who have believed. 1 Corinthians 15 says, we shall all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye at the last trumpet. When the trumpet sounds, when that trumpet sounds, he's gathering us together, and we will always be with the Lord. And 1 Thessalonians 4 said, thus always comfort one another with these words. But verse 8, Jesus presses us with the foolish. For when that day comes, and in all these calls that have come, what do they say? They say, and the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, since there will not be enough for us and for you, go rather to the dealers and buy for yourselves. And while they were going to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered, truly I say to you, I do not know you. Well, that's such a sobering verse, isn't it? The door is shut. It's the same sort of language when the ark door was shut and God had shut in his people into that ark before the flood came. It's the same language that's being used. The kingdom is shut. The day of salvation is over and it is past. There's no more entering. I told you the other day, I met a man who said to me, I won't, kind of mocking me, I won't believe until your Messiah comes. Too late. Heaven will be a time of praising the Lord day and night for redeeming us by the blood of the Lamb. Hear the call of the gospel. It's a day of salvation. It's a day of mercy. He ends this parable saying this. Watch, therefore, you do not know the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming.
to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Call us toll-free at 888-504-8805. That's 888-504-8805. Contact us through the web at agradio.org. That's agradio.org. We're on Facebook. Look for Abounding Grace Radio Ministry. Listen daily on this station and subscribe in iTunes or use our free Android app. We trust this program has encouraged you to trust in Christ for your standing with God and to live in His abounding grace.